welcome to another episode of It Was Mooney, your source for commentary on all things movie, streaming, and pop culture related. I'm your host, Cosi, and I'm joined always by Wani B. And today we're joined in studio by special guest, Jim. We're coming to you live from Real Hype Studios, and as always, today's episode was recorded before a live studio ostrich. Wani B, what's on tap for today's show?
We're going to be kind of discussing our childhood anime favorites, how we all got started into it, segue into some of our favorites, some of the all-time animes we've watched, and kind of go over what's on tap for today, what's going on in the current seasons, what's upcoming in future seasons, what we're excited for. Kind of give it a past, present, and future vibe to our anime look.
Sounds good, man. Seriously, Jim, thanks for coming, man. This is awesome. Long time coming, so great to have you, brother.
Appreciate it. I'm Jim. Thank you for having me here. I've known Juan since high school, and that's around the time I started torrenting anime, and Juan's been a roller coaster ever since.
Back in the days when LimeWire, Pirate Bay.
Yeah, he said torrent. I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't heard that term in so long.
We were shameless. None of us had any money to go buy DVDs.
Wait, yeah, so Jim, you say you torrent. So what were you torrenting then back in high school?
Oh, you know what? I still remember the very first anime I torrented was something called Air. A-I-R. I don't think most people would know what it would be about. It was based off a visual novel, and it was even like the second or third visual novel of that company. And it was just a comfy anime about a girl and a guy in a village life, and they're growing up. Very slice of life feeling. But I remember pirating the Seven Seas off Anime Ski and getting just one episode a week. You didn't download the whole anime. You just downloaded that one episode.
Man, torrenting. Because I remember, all right, so I'm not as, I love anime. So my first foreign anime was not torrenting. It was Digimon, Digital Monsters. So that was 2000. And I think, I didn't realize that, like, there was a whole, like, almost like 40, 50 year history of just animation coming out of Japan. And as an American kid, just watching that, our foray was, you know, the Pokemons, it was the Digimons, it was the One Piece on Funimation. Yu-Gi-Oh! Oh my gosh, Yu-Gi-Oh! So, like, I think it wasn't until, that was my first foray. But then college was when I had friends who remember, so friend of the show, Aaron from last week, he introduced me to DBZ. So DBZ I watched a lot as a kid at cousin's house and whatnot, but never really, you know, sucked my teeth into it like I did with college. So are you guys obviously you guys are DBZ watchers, right? Was that the first one for you guys, or was that
funny enough for me? It was mostly Dragon Ball, actually, not DBZ, but the original Dragon Ball.
Goku, explain that then.
Yeah, cause so it's basically baby Yoku, not baby, of course. He's like, what, maybe 10 years old. Mm-hmm. It's a very different vibe, of course. He's not just fighting everybody, saving the world. I mean, they're still kind of collecting the Dragon Balls. You know, I was very young, so some of it's obviously a little hazy. But the idea was more, you know, they were kind of collecting the Dragon Balls. You saw the Make-A-Wish situation with the dragon.
Oh, yeah, Make-A-Wish Foundation.
I still remember when the first wish ever was this little piggy character, side character, wish for a pair of underpants so that the bad guy wouldn't be able to get his wish with the Dragon Balls. And it ended up with literally a pair of briefs on his head, like with the ears sticking out. It was very goofy. you know, Goku is special power. I think he learned the Kamehameha early on in that, but became a gigantic monkey, like some King Kong shit.
So Vegeta and Cell hadn't... So they're like... Are they like Dragon Ball Z, those guys?
Some of the characters were in both. Like, I think Bulma was in it, Master...
Yeah, Bulma was in it, Chi-Chi's father was in it, and Master Roshi went on to it. Uh-huh. But the core cast definitely went on, but it was still more of a more comedic time for Akira Toriyama.
It wasn't kind of badass Goku fighting the bad guy of the season, saving the world, doing this epic...
It was simpler, it
was a little kid, right? It was a little kid getting up to shenanigans. It had a much more lighthearted tone. I mean, that was what was around. Actually, a lot of Sailor Moon as well. Even in Latin America, we're talking about watching Dragon Ball and Sailor Moon with dub back to back.
That's incredible. Like, you talk about, like, just the reach. Because, you know, in like I think the global recognition of a character like Sailor Moon or Goku, like, you can go anywhere around the world and, like, people know that Dragon Ball symbol. People know who Goku is. I think, like, everybody's first experience with anime is definitely different. But friend of the show, Jim here. Jim, I love the fact you like brought up just like research here, just in terms of like your top five. And I love that a lot of these I've never heard of before. Like, go into like, so like, all right, Blue Submarine number six is your number one. Like, why is it your personal number one top five?
All right, if we want to just, I'll throw out my top five. And sure. Yeah, we're talking about this list.
Yeah.
And, my top five, starting with number one, is Blue Submarine number six. 2, Code Geass. 3, Neon Genesis Evangelion. 4, Legend of Galactic Heroes. And 5, A Curveball Saga of Tanya the Evil. Now, talking about Blue Submarine number 6, I actually watched on Toonami, which is what came with Gundam Wing and Sailor Moon, yes, and Dragon Ball Z. Yeah, it was aired as a 4-episode OVA, original video animation. And each episode was 30 minutes long. And it was the first anime that not only had 3D animation, but 2D, and it combined it. So you had this 3D CGI submarine submerged and doing combat, but then the characters and the dialogue was in the traditional 2D animation. Okay. And it blended this really unique style. It came out in 1999, 2000, I believe. And I think we watched it here in probably 2001. Of course, watched it in dub because it was a Toonami. But that impressed me as a child on how anime could be so beautiful.
You know, I want to take a quick second to shout out Toonami because Toonami.
Oh, seriously, man. Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously I had that experience watching stuff in Colombia, watching dubbed anime, but it's kind of crazy, the concept of just putting what was like a 10 p.m. Cartoon Network, like what on kid Friday
is,
nights.
What kid is up at 10 p.m.?
You know, we were, you know, so. For the youths out there, back in the day, TV after 10 p.m. got grim. We're talking about infomercials, reruns of stuff you've already watched multiple times.
Golden Girls episodes.
Yeah, just weird stuff. Maybe Nick at Night was decent.
Yeah, I was holding it up. Yeah,
but
yeah.
Even then, we're talking about like shows airing 20 years after air dates. And that was the best thing you could watch on TV past 10 p.m. And then out of nowhere, because Cartoon Network was a show for kids, so kids were watching, you know, for after school from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. when their bedtime was, right? Uh-huh. There's no streaming. There's no Netflix. You have to watch everything at a scripted time. And out of nowhere comes Toonami, part of Adult Swim, which was in itself pretty revolutionary. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, just an anime segment for several hours. Was it Friday or Saturday night?
It was Friday and Saturday nights. And I want to give them credit like as well, because that's where I first saw Cowboy Bebop. Cowboy Bebop is a personal favorite of mine. I know it's mainstream cliche to say, but Toonami, to your credit, it introduced that to me.
A lot of these, Inuyasha, Full Metal Alchemist,
Samurai Champloo,
Samurai Champloo, Outlaw Star.
Oh my gosh! I think
was Yu Yu Hakusho on there?
Yeah. I think it might have been, but I
can't
sure.
remember.
Okay, yeah. Again, it was. I think I really applauded them for just bringing that over, like, to the West. And I think just going in, I don't want to like hop around too much, but something like Neon Genesis Evangelion, like, I caught on late because I have Amazon Prime, so, like, they have a new series of movies that was on Amazon Prime, and gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous animation. You know, I think, again, like, when you come to animation with anime, you have stuff like, was it Akira was there? Also, Ghost in the Shell, the 95 version.
Absolutely.
But then, like, Neon Genesis, I think, I can see how it really influenced a lot of stuff afterwards. I didn't know how, like, old it was. So Jim, can you go into just like your love for Neon Genesis, because it's your number three, and that's pretty high up there for
yeah
favorites.
Honestly, it should probably be number two, but I would say
really
Neon Genesis Evangelion. I would say the rebuild movies are something I watch every year annually. It's okay. Something I'm doing this year. I would recommend rewatching the rebuild movies. I say that because it's much more digestible. The series is the 26 episode series with its own ending of 25 and 26 is not as digestible, but it is good. It is a classic.
So what do you mean by I'm sorry to cut you off. What do you mean by digestible, though?
I would say just watching it hasn't aged as well. You have the tropes you have to deal with and engage with that are not necessarily recognizable and received by the public today. And the arc of how they build the story and how they develop the characters and build the world is a much slower pace, along with you get this trickle feed of what the world is happening, and you don't really wrap your mind around it.
Mm, okay, gotcha.
I will say, I watched it recently as well, on Jim's recommendation, of course. Mm. So, I watched the original, the original episodes, right? The original show.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the things Jim's talking about, to be more specific, there's a lot of fan service. A lot of awkward fan service.
I've heard that term a lot too.
So fan service basically, usually, especially in anime, it means a lot of skimpy clothed girls, a lot of revealing shots.
Oh, panty shots here.
Panty shots.
Tight booty shorts, you know, with obviously focus on the butt.
Oh, yeah, okay. A lot of cleavage shots, a lot of sexy poses.
Even if it's only hand-drawn, it's still just, you know.
It's very titillating.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay. And again, it's in a way, it's not to say that women can't be sexy or be dressed sexy, but it's in a way that's clearly meant to be gratuitous and clearly made by some horny dude who wanted to put some, you know, some women he was into on screen.
You know, I think the best, now that you've explained what fan service is, I think the best usage I've seen in modern time was in Chainsaw Man with Power and the main guy. I forgot what the main guy's name is, but just how they drew Power, how like they, yeah, she's feisty, she's evil, but she's like very, very sexy. And like we're seeing her, that's how like the main guy sees her, but it was done in a way that didn't feel like, oh, they're exploiting Power, but she was able to still keep that.
In modern days, again, you can have a woman who's sexy and into it. It's more, I don't know how to say it.
I feel like there's a deliberateness to that. I think when you're talking about Power from Chainsaw Man, you're talking about a character that's designed to look sexy, yet rugged, a little feralness, yet this attraction to it.
Yeah.
But she's not deliberately trying to show her cleavage. That's kind of with the ferality of her character. I think when we're talking about fan service, it's like a deliberate drawn frame that portrays something that might be a little more, provocative.
Risque. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or again, just, you know, certain women drawn with just oversized tits and ridiculous figures.
Okay, that I've seen a lot. Okay.
Yeah. So again, you'll see it. You'll see it if you watch anime. It doesn't mean, you know, that every woman in any one of the shows is bad or anything like that, or that it ruins the show, but certainly something you have to be aware of.
For instance, something like Sailor Moon, do you think that's a fan servicey show? Would that be under the guy?
You know, it's
umbrella?
Hard to say. Of that era, I would say it's not.
Okay.
But I will immediately point out and say that there is no woman that wears skirts that short on the regular, right?
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Sailor Moon wears very short skirts.
I'll give you that.
And it's like, but it's also to empower the image, right?
And it's also, you know, when they're transforming, you know, they almost, they show it all colorful and rainbow.
It's like a Power Rangers.
Yes.
But you kind of see their bodies all getting wrapped up in a certain way. It's
I mean, it's still a leotard.
Yeah, right? It's still, but even that one's not as shameful as some of these other, you know, again, it's women who just, it's unnecessary. Right, it's very explicitly designed to appeal to the male gaze, so to speak.
Yes. So on that topic, one anime I've been watching recently, and I still need to finish that had just aired, and it's Magical Girl as well, but it deliberately has fan service, and this one's
called
Gushing Over Magical Girls, and this one's available on High Dive.
They went, hey, yo,
Gushing Over Magical Girls, and this one is deliberately about magical girls and fan service. And we won't get into it too much, but I will say it is rated 18+. There is no nudity or anything like that, but you have to be of a mature person to appreciate it. And that one has deliberate fan service, right? I'm talking about the main character is a villain with a crop that is punishing magical girls.
Oh. Well, okay. Yeah.
That's interesting. That's interesting. So anime, I mean, obviously we have plenty of examples here for movies in the West. Like, who can forget the first scene of Megan Fox in Transformers showing up?
Oh my gosh! And just
her
booty
shorts,
sweating, like her working on that car and like pushing,
on the motorcycle. It was a car or motorcycle?
It was a car.
Yeah.
And I think we're primed for that.
So we have there's plenty of fan service in the West. It's not like we're immune to it, but definitely. Definitely a common trope in anime, especially anime from that era, from the 90s, back when we were a little less civilized.
You know what I've seen, I guess in the new age anime, it's, you know how, you guys have explained what fan service is, but I think there's also now a kind of like service of carnage, blood service. The one I use a lot is like Elfen Lied. That's one where it's upsetting, it's bloody. It's gory, but like it's cool. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. I kind of even put like Full Metal Alchemist in there. Full Metal Alchemist is one where I was watching, and then there's a certain episode came along that kind of shocked me so bad that I had to stop watching.
It's a
20-year
show. Yeah. We can probably talk about.
Yeah. So there's yeah.
What was the little girl's name? Mia.
Yeah. I know her. Yeah. It's a. I can look that up, but yeah.
It's the kind of scene that will stay with you forever.
But like, do you think there's like a blood fan service, is what you want to call it?
I feel like there's definitely a genre for it. If we're talking about shows, like maybe I think Samurai Shampoo have some of it, like Rurouni Kenshin or Samurai X have a bit of it.
There's something that's really mean where they're like, they'll just mutilate people. Like a monster will pick somebody up and just like smash them, you know, and like they'll...
Let me tell you about the first experience I had with that, which actually happened in Ninja Scroll. And Ninja I'll tell Scroll. You, I didn't realize what I was getting into with Ninja Scroll. This is my first rated R anime as well, and I was 13 years old. We were moving from Ohio to New York, and we were in a van, and my parents, being very DIY and very, like, I want to please my children as much as I could, hooked up a CRT TV inside the van so I could watch an anime on the way to drive to Ohio.
When you say a CRT, how about we talking?
I'm talking like a 7-9-inch TV in back of like...
Yeah, you kids at home, this is like way before...
I mean, this is like 2003, 2002.
Shit.
And you know what movie I ended up buying off the cuff, not knowing? It was a cartoon. It was animated. I picked Ninja Scroll as a 13-year-old.
I'm looking at the animation. Ninja Scroll looks freaking awesome.
That was the first time I saw titties in an anime.
It reminds me of Berserker a little bit.
Yes, but that was also very gruesome. And I got to the scene with titties, and I realized, oh, I'm not supposed to be watching this.
That's how they get you.
Get another anime to watch, so I didn't use that TV.
He threw the whole damn TV away.
You know, it's funny. My parents, we had the same kind of setup. We had a, you know, those old Toyota Siennas, the minivans.
Oh man, with this you could put it with the
you
TV.
You got a little TV.
Yeah.
Except we hooked it up somehow. We jury-rigged it so I could hook up my GameCube.
To the
TV, and it like literally sat there. Like first day, got the GameCube. One of my favorite childhood memories. Kind of like what you're talking about, where you're just sitting there playing the game. Little fucking 10-inch screen. You can barely see. You're destroying your eyes.
Oh, absolutely.
The colors were terrible.
Heck yeah.
But it was absolute childhood memories.
And you are close to that TV. Enjoy.
Dude, Jim, I just want to ask you this because I finally have you in a place where you can talk about this. But you have Gundam Wing. It's your top five growing up.
Yeah.
I saw, this is years ago. I'll never forget this. In your room, you had a display of just Gundam figures that you put together meticulously. These things are just like what, two foot tall, almost some of the biggest.
You know,
like,
they range from 6 to 8 inches up to maybe 12 to 15 inches, depending on the grades. And you got your real grades, heavy grades, master grade, perfect grade. I'm glad you brought that up because that's a hobby I recently got into. Actually, it's been on hiatus for maybe 10 years. So when you visited, that was a while ago, and I had finished building it. Now I have recently rediscovered the skills of building Gundams.
What goes into that? Like, and it's not just, it's not like Legos where you just put them together, no?
There is a certain component where it is like Legos, but the factor that's different, that separates from Legos is, the best way to put it, and it might sound meticulous and boring, is you're removing the plastic from the mold for the Lego. And that is, you get the plastic frame that has what's called the tree, has all the plastic parts. You need to clip it off. You need to clip each individual piece off. You need to shave off the nubs that are on the piece. And then you have what you could call your Lego piece. And then you assemble following the instructions. What has changed in the 10 years since I last came in is two specific tools. One is what is called the God Hand Pliers. Now, these clip the nubs so clean, you don't even almost need to file it down. But you still can. And what now is the other tool is the glass file. These two tools I did not have before. The glass file is, of course, by its name, just a little file with little dots, and you shave off the plastic by running the file over. What I would do before these glass files were invented was take an X-Acto knife, and I would slowly chip off the nubs of the plastic, which would result in multiple cuts on my fingers and Band-Aids all over, and now I live Band-Aid free.
Slay, bro. Dude, I always wonder that, because I never wanted to touch them. I just wanted to look at them because I was afraid I was like break them. But you could see like the intricacies of it. Did you have to paint each part, or did they all come painted?
Generally, you don't have to paint them. Okay. What you can just come and they come pre-assembled. But what you can do We'll say, let's say there's three levels to it, right? Mm-hmm. The first level is you just assemble it. Out of the box, you put it together, it's good. Mm-hmm. The second level, we'll say, is called, we'll say intermediate. You can highlight it, put in little marks. Highlighting is like there's crevices in the Gundam models. You put in a little dark shading, it pops out the details. You can put a little water decal here and there. Mm-hmm. You can use Gundam markers, which are very easy to paint sections, and you put it up, apply the paint very simply as well. And then there's level three, which is when you just go full-blown airbrushing. You prime the model, you airbrush each individual piece, you put in the custom color, the custom decal, and you can paint on a special design if you want to. Which I have a friend that does that for competitions.
So like how long?
Gundam competitions?
Absolutely.
How long does it take to like do one of those? Like,
oh, you know, let's say, yeah, actually, I'll use an example. I watched YouTube the other day, right? Uh-huh. I think a guy spent on a competition piece that he won in the Philippines, 150 hours on a single 12-inch piece. I think it was
airbrush each piece.
Oh my God.
Each individual panel airbrush. Like when you look at the Gundam and you see the forearm panel, that piece is in the airbrush separately from everything else with multiple layers probably to get the right color and shading on it.
That's incredible.
Dude, that sounds like, fun. That's like yes. whole, close to a week of
the,
work.
You know, I recently read this as I was building my Gundams and the thing I'll emphasize for Gundam building is you pay for the process. You're not paying for the model. The model is the result. What you're doing when you build Gundams is you go through this hobby process of assembly. You go through the meticulous steps of combining the different things, using the different tools, building the dexterity in your fingers, and the process, you enjoy it. And when the end of the process, you got a plastic figure.
Yeah, I always liken it to like puzzle making or shipbuilding.
You know, I love Legos. And like, I got some of those fancy Lego flowers for adults, whatnot. I love it. So, I mean, that just sounds like an even fancier version of that. That sounds very appealing.
Absolutely. Hey, if you ever want to try it, I could get you a beginner kit and some beginner tools. I think $20 for tools, $20, $10-15 for a kit, and you're ready to go.
And I almost want to have a mecha episode. How many Gundam shows have you watched?
Oh my gosh!
Obviously, Neon Genesis.
Neon Genesis is the big one.
Big mecha.
Would Power Rangers count, like the Megazords? Or
I mean, it's not an anime, but obviously it's a mecha.
Would Ultraman count? Because Ultraman is awesome.
Yeah.
Kamen Rider. Would Kamen Rider also is that in there too?
I feel like it kind of edges.
I love
there.
Those. Okay.
Like they're between the kaiju genre and the mecha genre.
Because Ultraman is a big dude, a big guy in a suit, but like a power ranger suit.
He
but
gets in this. I think you know what? I guess I could count it.
I always love that because there is definitely like some overlap between that and the Toho the MonsterVerse.
In terms of mecha anime, countless. The most recent one is obviously Gundam ones. Even Code Geass, which is on my list, is considered a mecha anime. Okay. That is great. All right, let me throw a curveball to you two. You guys have seen Attack on Titan, right?
Yes, sir.
Is Attack on Titan a mecha anime?
You know what? It's a zombie anime.
It has the makings of a mecha. It has like the ingredients, but you know, it's following like the recipe of a mecha, but then it replaces that with like the Titans is how
see where you're coming from as far as kind of a biological mecha situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right? Because Evangelion is technically a biological situation.
I will say Evangelion has a similar vibe in certain...
Right?
Yeah, it links with the person, but you're still control. It's like Pacific Rim.
The mecha is its own biological being.
But then
what you're underestimating. It's not... It's a living being.
It's separate from the person.
Oh,
yes.
So it's like the Gyver almost. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But it has its own biological...
Whereas I guess a Titan only exists as long as the person's in it.
But I will say, my argument has always been, especially season one, especially early on, it's a post-apocalyptic zombie episode. And it's one of my favorite ones. All right. I'm going to break it down. One, humanity has been destroyed by brainless, human-eating monsters that just wander around randomly with no purpose other than being human.
Okay.
It's some post-apocalyptic, end of humanity, last stand hold. You know, it's not like a Day of the Dead where it's kind of showing the fall of humanity. It's kind of already...
It's happened.
It's already happened. Yeah. It's kind of a Walking Dead where you kind of see these strongholds. You kind of... Obviously, you're focused on one society with walls and such. The fear you get from these things is again, you there's more skilled, some people who are more skilled, they fight back, they have strategies. You cut the neck / head, kind of like the zombies.
Right,
there's a way to kill them.
Okay. A way to kill them is similar, mm-hmm. right? Otherwise, they're invincible. They kind of keep going, regenerate, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just that vibe of hopelessness. Like, you watch Walking Dead, the overwhelming sensation you feel is, okay, the world is destroyed. We have these little wins, these little safe spots, these little civilizations. But at any point, boom, the zombies break through the wall. They break through the encampment. They break through the protection. They start eating people, destroying things. There's no purpose to it. There's not some evil zombie overlord telling all the zombies what to do. It's pointless carnage.
There's an engine of destruction, kind of like a runaway tornado or a hurricane. Like, exactly. It's there, force of nature.
It's a force of nature, the Titans are. Eventually, it gets more political. The bad guys become humans. There's a lot of lore and a lot of mysticism. It does become more kind of that biological mecha thing we were talking about. But especially early on, I thought it was a premier example of how to do a zombie show without making it obvious you're doing zombies. Because, mm-hmm. you know, a show like Walking Dead would be like, oh, it's the walkers, or the Last of Us would be oh, it's the infected,
the clickers
or whatever. There was a name for them, right? The infected, whatever else. They go out of their way not to say the word zombies. And this way, again, it doesn't appear like a normal zombie. It's not a shuffling undead corpse. But again, eventually you do realize it kind of is. You know, there's a human being there, right? There's kind of that same sensation of, oh, we're killing a human being now. Mm-hmm. We're not just killing, it's a zombie. You're supposed to. It's the being inside is gone, but still that kind of sentimentalism, that kind of horror of what you're doing.
Yeah.
No, I love Attack on Titan. One of my favorite animes of all time.
Absolutely. No, I still remember thinking the writer was, to put it colloquially, writing out his ass. That he was not sure what he was doing. That I thought to myself, he doesn't know what is going on. I think he's going to write himself into a wall and we're just going to see what happens. And then there I am, sitting in Juan's old apartment, streaming anime pirated off some random website off my MacBook onto his TV. And the line drops, and I won't spoil it for Attack on Titan.
Yeah, yes, please.
But
don't.
The line drops on what happens, and I look at Juan. I'm like, we need to replay that. What the fuck just happened?
It's what I think. What I love,
anime moment. I think anime plot twist.
I think what I loved about that is like it kind of. I know it's kind of cliche to say, but Game of Thrones did a thing where like they'll like sucker punch you with like a reveal, or sucker punch you with like something or another. And I think Attack on Titan took a page out of that book, where that show knew how to, like, one, like, show you characters you love, and then, you know, horrible things happen to them, but they're also able to deliver a gut punch of, like, of a knowledge drop, and have you still be invested, enthralled, and still wanting to see what happens next. It's, like, a very, very fine line that they're able to toe with that one.
They did a great job. I mean, it's a show where the first episode involves the main character's mom being eaten by one of these giant zombies.
Oh, yeah. Like, they have zero chill first episode.
Yeah, this is a show that gets in your feels and gets you, you know, feeling outraged, feeling terrified, feeling sad from the first episode, and kind of ups the ante from there. Great, great show.
Yes.
Dude, so tell me about Legend of Galactic Heroes, man. That's your number four top five.
Glad you brought that up.
Incredible, incredible series.
And
so
we'll keep it short on this because I don't think you guys have seen it yet.
I haven't seen a lot of it.
Unfortunately, I have not.
I will go ahead and open with this and say that I purchase a High Dive account annually just to crusade this anime.
And I thank you for your purchase.
And when you guys want the account, anybody who's even friends and family of yours that wants access to that account, let me know that the whole purpose of this High Dive is to watch it. It's 110 episodes OVA, and it is.
What does OVA mean?
Original video animation, meaning that it never came to TV. It was already just released on like VHS or DVD.
Okay,
yeah, never aired on television. I will preface it by saying, unfortunately, it is objectively the greatest anime that ever exists.
Unfortunately, y'all,
it is gorgeously drawn. My God.
For the era, it's a 1970s, 80s anime. It's old. With the recent rebuild as well, which is still, my friend who is a very diehard enthusiast about it is comparing it back and forth, says it's good enough, but some of the characters are different. I'll just preface. It's not like your great intense animation like Demon Slayer of the era or Ghibli, but there is just such tension and political drama written in the anime that it is absolutely beautiful.
I think that's what it was. Maybe it wasn't like the most beautiful, but yeah, what it had, what they were saying, what they had going for it, really rounded it out to like this is well done, and it's not an anime that like people would even mention. I never heard of it until Jim told me about it like a couple years ago.
To check it out. Yes,
once again, Legend of Galactic Heroes. Just to give a quick preface about it, it's sci-fi in space. There's spaceships, there's principalities doing war, and there's a lot of political tension, and there's characters that you won't find more better written than any other media.
Have you seen any of the Dune movies, Denis Villeneuve Dune?
Absolutely. First Dune movie and the second one, and I read the book and the audiobook as of recent.
Same. Excellent. So do you see some kind of similarities, some parallels, a little bit to just what's happening, to just how stuff's executed? Because I definitely saw like, oh, that's kind of cool. Maybe Denis Villeneuve maybe didn't watch this, but I can see how stuff could be used in Bar. Do you see that at all?
Absolutely. You know, even down to some of the in Dune 2, the ship designs.
Yeah, the design of the ship.
Designs are very, you know, there's definitely homages there or influences there.
It's beautifully drawn, beautifully made. And again, it's on High Dive. Listeners out there, if you have not seen it, it's called Legend of the Galactic Heroes. It's Jim's fourth personal top five. Anime.
You know, speaking of homages and classic anime scenes that have bridged their way into the American consciousness, let's talk about Akira for a second.
Oh my god, that motorcycle, right?
Obviously the motorcycle.
Everybody's motorcycle.
It's motorcycle just, slide is iconic.
It's not even just the motorcycle. What is it? Neo Tokyo.
Yes.
Just the design for it.
Yeah.
This kind of post cyberpunk
Blade Runner-esque.
No, it's definitely cyberpunk.
Blade Runner-esque.
You can visualize a city just moving with the marimba in the background, and it produces this timeless scene.
And it was all hand-drawn. I don't know if you've seen, there's a scene where he's like riding through the city like on his motorcycle, and it has like a panning shot of like the background of Tokyo, and like they drew, it's hand-drawn. Like you can see like little individual lights in the windows, and it was drawn on like glass. Like back in the day, to give it that kind of like look, and again, it's like I know we have like CG nowadays, we have like these studios, but I just love just that kind of animation.
You can tell a lot of movies, Matrix, a lot of these kind of cyberpunk kind of postmodern movies, a lot of motorcycles and kind of grimy but well lit and shiny.
It's lived in.
Right.
Stuff.
It's this edge to it where, you know, there's lots of lights, there's lots of neon, there's lots of flash, but everything kind of looks grimy and aged and rusted. It set the stage for, honestly, you feel the influence from watching all these movies, especially maybe, I mean, obviously none of us were born at the time it came out, right? We all had to watch it after the fact.
Right.
But, you know, after growing up watching Matrix, after growing up watching some of these action movies, some of these scenes with motorcycles, going back and watching Akira, you just feel the history of the cinema flowing through out of it. You can see the influence.
So my first time experiencing Akira, I only got to watch 30 seconds of it.
Really?
And that was because we were staying at a family friend's house. It was me, my sister, my parents, and it was a nice couple. And the couple wanted to show, my parents are into anime as well. There's even some seasons where my father watches more anime than me.
Oh, man.
Straight up. But the couple wanted to show my parents Akira on the big screen. So they were going to watch Akira. I was maybe like 10 or 9 years old. Not appropriate for Akira.
No.
And the one scene I did see was at the very beginning, and it was a very bloody scene of a guy crawling forward and just bleeding out on the floor after like a police confrontation or something like that. And I quickly scurried back upstairs and did not see the rest of the movie. It was not until much later in my, late teens, I finally tore into the movie, gave it a watch, downloaded the soundtrack, and dreamed about opening a motorcycle that cool.
I'm sure we've all had some of these experiences when we were young watching movies we shouldn't have. So I remember my dad put on Godfather for me.
Oh,
when I was like 9 years old, maybe, yeah, probably about 9 years old. And then he just left me in the room by myself. And suddenly the scene came up with the dead horse's head.
Oh,
and
no.
The dude's head. I almost ran out crying, y'all. It was not the kind of thing you're supposed to be seeing as a 9 years old. I love horses. I love animals. I did not realize, you know, you don't realize the movie's like fake. I thought they had just killed a horse to put on screen. It was horrifying. You know? So I definitely get where you're coming from, Joe.
I mean, come to think of it, I think my first R-rated movie in theaters was The Matrix. I was 7 years old. And the funny thing was, like, my family, my mom, my aunt, like, they thought it was a black movie because Lawrence Fishburne was a fan. So we're like, oh yeah, let's go watch this Laura Fishburne movie. And so like we get there and like we see I recognize Keanu as like the guy from Bill and Ted. I seen it on TV, but I didn't think nothing of it. And then come to find out, no, it's about Keanu Reeves. But again, that's a movie where it left such an indelible mark on me just from the fight scene. So the choreographer, his name is Wu Ping. He's one of the greatest choreographers, I'd say, in Hollywood history. He did the choreography for The Matrix, also for Iron Monkey. A lot of you guys know that movie. So, like, that's where I first got introduced to just, like, martial arts and just gory, not safe for work type stuff at 7 years old. And I think I turned out just fine, if you ask me. But
I feel like we could do a whole separate segment on just Shaolin movies and kung fu movies. Maybe you'll bring me back on for one of those days.
I definitely want to bring you and Aaron back for when we talk about just fighting films in general, because this group is we love
it's
martial
funny
arts.
You say that though, because Matrix was the first rated R movie my parents let me
watch. Yeah,
it
like
was,
yes,
right.
Frankly, I don't even know why it was rated R. You know what?
Just for violence.
Looking back on it, it's not even particularly gruesome violence.
Yeah, it's not really gruesome.
I mean, guns, violence, probably.
A lot of guns. This was the same year as Columbine. Right. Just so you know, definitely the trench coat and the gun thing was.
Maybe
they were
why,
kind of. They're kind
that's
of.
That's why the whole trench coat and guns definitely did give that Columbine vibe.
Did they watch The Matrix? When did The Matrix come out? Hold on a second.
99, I want to say.
You know, The Matrix might have inspired the Columbine.
Dude, I think it might have. Keanu Reeves. Thanks a lot, dude.
Yeah,
of course, Keanu. It's all your fault.
Right. Yeah.
Thank obviously, it wouldn't have happened otherwise.
Yeah, thank goodness
we're
we
being very sarcastic.
Thank goodness we fixed gun violence in America, man.
No, Keanu's awesome.
Yeah, man.
We love Keanu. We're just being sarcastic.
John Wick, the Baba Yaga. No, like, again, so writing out your top five list, Jim.
Yeah.
Saga of Tiny the Evil. I've never heard of this.
Okay.
What is that?
I'll drop this. I'll keep this. I threw this curveball on purpose.
The hell is that,
and,
man?
You know, I threw this again because recently I was just cycling through anime to watch. I have a bunch of pending to watch. I have to go finish a bunch of one of them is like Dungeon Meshi, which is on Netflix. I recommend that as well.
Dungeon Meshi?
Yeah, we'll bring that on topic on the ongoing. That one's ongoing. It's on Netflix. It's great.
Okay.
But I was like, I'm in a nostalgic mood. I just want to watch something that I enjoy and I know I enjoy.
Uh-huh.
And a new chapter of the manga was published, which looks entirely different from the anime. Like, the art style is 100% different. But I decided to jump into the anime. Saga of Tanya the Evil. Oh my goodness. All right. The long and short of it... It is about a guy who's reincarnated. Yeah, technically is an isekai, unfortunately.
Oh, cool. Isekais are hot in the streets,
late
man.
Late 29-year-old reincarnated as a 9-year-old girl in Germany, pre-World War I.
Okay.
Who was raised in an orphanage and eventually spotted to be magical capable. And they train mages to be aerial fighters, the equivalent of like fighter planes. So she becomes an absolutely gruesome demon on the battlefield as a like now an 11-year-old girl. So this does is bring the trope, Japanese trope, which is not readily accepted, of lolicon, this 9, 10, 11-year-old girl being an absolute badass with magic on a World War I, World War II battlefield.
Okay.
And to spin it and to twist it, when the guy, he's a 29-year-old, I think, guy in Japan,
mm-hmm.
got isekai'd, the reason he got isekai'd was because God, quote-unquote, was like, came right before he died, like, hey, do you believe in me? And he's like, no, you're a piece of shit. Why do I believe in you, God? I'm going to make you believe in me. So I'm going to bring you and throw you into this Germany and into the body of a little girl. And then not only that, He knows that he's been reincarnated, so he retains all his memories, and he's thinking like that. Wow. And he calls God Being X, Sanzai X, Being X. Fuck you, you're not God, you're Being X. Being X first appears. Being X appears two critical times. One time during when she's younger, but another time is when she has to perform a miracle. And now every time she performs a miracle of using magic, she has to pray to him. So now you got this lolicon who's in Germany using magic that has to pray to a god and fighting an incredible political war.
Holy shit, Jim. Okay. All right. And that's your top five.
Yes, sir.
All right. All right. Well, okay.
But, you know, let's bring it forward to, I think, modern day. I think we talked about a lot of iconic anime and a lot of things we've enjoyed before.
One thing we kind of missed on that I wanted to note. Death Note.
Oh, yes. And again, like, so Jim, just to bring that around, so what do you think is the state of modern anime? Like, where do you see it going? What do you see? Because you have, like, an old head, like, Hayao Miyazaki coming out with new stuff. And, like, you have all these old heads, and again, we have the rest in peace old head of Akira Toriyama. But what do you think is the state now? Do you think, are we going to see some, like, young up-and-comers come in? Or do you think it's an old man's game?
I think on two factors of that. One, unfortunately, the isekai genre is taking over. I hope
it's so hot in the streets.
It's
man.
Hot. I'm into it.
Me too.
I hope it dies soon.
Oh, no.
Because we need fresh things. And in terms of fresh things,
I got
Hayao Miyazaki, we could talk about The Boy and the Heron for a long while. But I think one new director that's on the up and rise, and I'm sure you guys have seen his films, is Makoto Shinkai. Makoto Shinkai is my personal favorite director. I got the opportunity to meet him at, I think, the 2013 Anime Expo. Shook his hand there. He is the creator of Your Name, or the more recent one, Suzume, or Weathering with You. Okay. But
beautiful movies.
Bangers, all three of them.
Absolutely. But I started with his very first one, which is called Voices of a Distant Star. If you guys have 2 hours one day, just give me your time and I will show you three of his films and you will understand why I love him. The unfortunate thing I will say about Makoto Shinkai is that he's very niche in that he produces a very particular type of media and you have to enjoy it. And if you don't, then you don't. And then,
but to be fair, y'all, I don't know about Universal, but it's a very... You know, a lot of anime is very fantastical, and not to say that this isn't, but it's very focused on this kind of youth stories, these kind of relatable stories that we all kind of remember about, you know, being in high school, being younger.
Like escapism for us old people.
Kind of escapism, okay. Kind of nostalgia, kind of taking us back to a more innocent time. And some of the movies I've seen kind of focus on... It's still modern Japan. It's not like some fantastical thing, but it kind of focuses a little bit more on the outskirts, some of the historical, some of the cultural, you know, not like the whole Tokyo, like thousands of people all crammed and lights on one of those cities that never sleeps. You kind of get that more of that view of that rustic, classical Japan, so to speak. Clearly nostalgic for the history of the country and for his own youth, right? Mm-hmm. Beautiful movies. Again, they do take fantastical turns. They are anime, but it's not like the focus. Some of these animes are still fun, but you know they go into heavy detail on the world building. They'll come up with numbers and rules and spend entire episodes explaining to you all the minutiae of how the world works. Versus these movies, yeah, they'll have magical cats and alternate dimensions and time travel and such, but the focus is on this kind of timeless youth love
coming of age
story.
So your opinion, Juan, that's kind of the state of the anime right now.
That I don't know about, I don't know if I'd say that. I mean, obviously there's plenty of Demon Slayer, Jujutsu Kaisen, obviously Attack on Titan just finished.
Yes,
you know, dudes being angry at the world and being the bad guy is never gonna.
Absolutely.
It's never gonna get old.
Always be that. Yeah.
You know, there's lots of cool things we can talk about. Obviously, my personal favorite recently, Jujutsu Kaisen season 2. Now that was a show, had some production troubles. Jim, maybe you can take us in a little some of those details because I know you know you're aware of some of this stuff. But
yeah, I think it came down to something about a writer's strike. They're basically getting overworked and. Look, you got to think about. We'll pull back the curtains for a moment. There's a lot that goes into hand drawing anime and producing it, and they're doing it at 40 hours a week, and you only have a certain amount of people, and they're not doing one anime. They're doing like three different animes at the same time.
Oh, I thought their life is Demon Slayer season two.
No. They're a studio, and they have to make money, and these people are making like, I don't know, the equivalent of $40,000 to $60,000 USD to be drawing all their time, and they're just not making enough money, and they wanted to fight for more, and I agree with them, and because of the fight for more, there became production issues, much similar to, I guess, the writer's
strike. Yeah, the writer's strike in Hollywood.
Kind of a similar vibe. You could see in a few episodes where the animation quality took a little bit of a hit. But, I mean, frankly, at one point, it seemed like they were canceling season two, right?
There was a point, I think around, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8, there was a point where they're like, hey.
There was a point where I expected it to be done. It was that big fight with Sukuna versus that demon that Fushiguro spawned, you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. That, like, extra demon that just came out of nowhere, like some super demon. It was incredible, even though you could kind of see the cracks, so to speak.
Right.
As some of the animation, those kind of low frame rate, kind of, basically didn't put as much detail as they could have. Mm-hmm. I thought they canceled that. I honestly thought they had just ended the season right there.
So, like, they'd rather just cancel everything than just pay their animators, basically.
It seemed like it, but then they finished the season.
Yes.
It finished the season. It was bizarre experiencing that in real time. I've never really experienced something like that.
It's uncommon, for sure. It is not a common season.
As far as I could tell, they announced that the season was canceled.
Pretty much. Wow. I mean, there was talks about just everything ending, and that wasn't the only show, I believe.
Chainsaw Man is also made by MAPPA. Attack on Titan just finished, made by the last season. Which was really kind of three seasons made by MAPPA.
Mm-hmm. So MAPPA
is great.
Yeah, they're really good at animating.
So the reason why I asked about the state of the anime is because I think one place anime could go to is the movie theater. Just hear me out. Because of just in America, there's kind of a big growing love and interest in all things anime. You're getting these films that are premiering at AMCs and AMC theaters and whatnot. Yeah, they don't bring in the box office, but they definitely get eyeballs on the property. Do you think we'll see more of these studios making their movies and putting them on into theaters, or has that been happening for as long as anime has been?
Absolutely, theaters have really taken more of a presence with anime. I mean, recently we've gotten to see Demon Slayer. And anime and theaters, gosh.
Jujutsu Kaisen also had a movie in theaters.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
exactly.
Yes,
Spy X Family is coming back with another one.
Yeah.
Ghibli had a run of their movies. Yeah. So I think they're releasing it month by month. And I think there's just been if there isn't a movie release in
Suzume,
Japan.
Suzume, talked about. We went to watch that in the theaters.
Exactly. Suzume, Weathering with You prior with that. And man, it feels like.
Belle was another great one.
Right. If it is released in Japan, I feel like it will be released here eventually as well. The platform and the media has just been now so proliferated to the masses, and everybody wants it. Everybody's going to be asking, hey, why wasn't that movie coming over here? Where is it?
I do think it remains somewhat of a niche market. You know, it's not. I don't think we're at the point where we're going to see something like Demon Slayer, where it was a top box office draw in Japan. The Mugen Train that came out. I don't think we're about to see that kind of sea change in the United States. You know, for a lot of people, subtitles is still a barrier too high.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. Yeah.
But saying that, I mean, there's clearly a market for it. There's clearly enough of a market for the Demon Slayer is being shameless and just releasing regular-ass episodes in the theaters to make money. I mean, they're just regular-ass episodes. It's not even a movie at this point.
Yeah.
So, obviously, Jujutsu Kaisen, Spy X Family, we've been talking about some of these shows. Mm-hmm. There's clearly a market there. There's clearly enough of a market that they're going to keep coming, and obviously there's a huge market in Japan for this, so they're going to keep being made. Mm-hmm. The issues Jim talked about with the production obviously could affect things. The economics seems different. Obviously, a lot of these animes don't seem to have commercials and a lot of the stuff we use to monetize TV shows in the United States. And so a lot of streaming services are failing, so I don't even know if streaming services are the solution to that. But I think we'll keep seeing them. I don't think they'll take over the box office, and I don't think we're about to see, you know, the next Suzume be number one at the box office in the United States, but right. They'll keep coming here.
This made me think, like, okay, like, well, like, where's the trajectory is? And I'm excited to see where it goes.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to think about where we came from, where I think, like, let's say, I think the Rebuild Evangelion movie, one, came out in, I want to say 2009. You can check me on this. Maybe 2007. That was not here in America. I could not go see Rebuild of Evangelion in theaters here because it was not popular enough to be received. Now, though, the last two movies, definitely. Yeah,
the last two I saw them because Amazon Prime had them exclusively on Amazon Prime.
Exactly.
That's how I saw them.
Accessible. It is much more accessible.
That's
now.
The future. Like, I appreciate Crunchyroll. I appreciate High Dive. But I think maybe licensing out some of your popular ones to, like, maybe a Netflix, maybe a Hulu. Because Hulu has anime. Netflix has anime. Like,
Netflix has gone hard in the paint.
Blue Eye Samurai is incredible. Incredible.
That, like,
several original animes by Netflix. Obviously, it's the home of Death Note and a couple of these shows, Fullmetal Alchemist.
It's where they're at.
I mean, that's where you see them at this point.
But the original, you said it yourself, I think the future of it is, again, maybe not relying on, like, licensing out, like, old stuff, but, like, again, making new stuff, which they clearly are. Again, like I think the modern crop of anime
would
has
you
been
say
incredible
Jim that anime has the kind of tendency we have in the States to kind of navel gaze, look back and remake old properties over and over again? Do you feel like they're a little more original, or if there's a little tendency to be nostalgic,
like,
and
forward thinking?
Absolutely. I mean, look, we're talking about recent remakes. I mentioned the Legend of Galactic Heroes got remade. Kenshin recently got remade. Uriah Yotorusa. Gosh, it's that green hair girl with the leopard leotard bikini. If I pull up a picture of her, you'll know who I'm talking about. I probably butchered her name. That just got a remade. So there's a nostalgia factor. But I feel like the difference between remaking things in anime and, let's say, a show, you get the quality of the animation, right? And you get things that the animation looks better. The voice actresses nowadays are 100 times better than they were in the 70s or even the 80s. No shade to them, but, I mean, they got equipment and they got training. And right. I think there's always that nostalgia factor that people want to see something they really enjoyed as a childhood remade into something more beautiful.
You know, it's funny, the way you say that, it almost sounds more like, kind of like video game remakes.
It does sound like video game remakes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like when they make remake Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy VII, for instance, where you're retaking that core story and core memories of the characters and what you watched. But, you know, they're updating the animation, the production values to match more modern sensibilities.
Yeah, and, right? Advent Children for Final Fantasy VII is a great example of that. I think it was in 2007 that came out. And that was, like, an example of remaking something from the old and being able to really... And now it's being remade again.
Are there some things that shouldn't be remade anime? Or something that shouldn't be turned into live action? Because you see that happen a lot, too. Almost every live action we've seen turned live action.
That might be two separate issues. That might be like an American thing where everything has to be turned into live action. But what do you think, Jim?
I think live action is a death trap. I think if we look at live action for anime, there's only been one real success story, unfortunately, as of recent. And that's One Piece.
One Piece was
and this
fantastic.
Is coming from a One Piece fan. I love One Piece. I read the manga religiously. Every week, we're just coming off a three-week break because Oda was mourning Akira Toriyama for 3 weeks.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. The live action did justice. But then we got other ones that are like Attack on Titan live action. That didn't catch on one. Yu Yu Hakusho.
I actually enjoyed it. Fullmetal was terrible.
I mean,
Death Note, I heard, was terrible.
Also terrible. Awful. Recently as well, not directly animated, but adjacent, is Avatar. was a, got another live action.
Oh, you're talking about the recent
one. Yeah, okay, the recent one. That one was
technically not anime, but that's as close as a Western show is going to get to anime.
Right.
Should we show Dragon Ball 2009 some love? Dragon Ball Evolution?
Very mixed. Not love. Yo, that doesn't exist.
Not love.
Sorry,
we can show it some memory. Recognition.
See, something like Dragon Ball, though.
Something else I scrubbed my memory is Ghost in the Shell with Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Wasn't the premise of that was that she was an actual Asian woman,
dude,
but that her ghost was Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah, and they got an actual Asian woman to play her, Scarlett Johansson.
That's...
Yeah, I don't even... Right. But either way...
That's some Hollywood bullshit, yo.
Right?
Yeah.
They gotta... That was 2017, everybody.
Ghost in the Shell itself is an actual... Another one of those movies...
Oh, it's a fantastic movie.
Timeless.
You see the influence.
Super influential, yeah, yeah.
Oh, you see the influence. Yeah. I love watching movies like that. Because it kind of shows you the history of cinema. It shows you where some of these ideas, where some of these visuals, some of these shots, the directors got the inspiration from. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not all popping out the head of one guy. There's a kind of history. There's a kind of progression.
You can like almost see the pinpoint where it went.
You can see individual scenes and individual shots from movies, individual influences. It's truly fascinating watching movies like this. Because you wouldn't think so. You would think, oh, it's the 70s. It was before the internet. It was before all this stuff. How are these white folks even watching, you know, Akira and Ghost in the Shell and all this other stuff? And yet somehow that love of film, that love of cinema, what really brings us together here, the reason we're sitting here making this.
Of course.
It's truly wonderful to see.
That media. I mean, look, who doesn't remember rewinding their first VHS tape and thinking to myself, I got to do this every time I got to want to watch this? So, and being able to just have that, you know, it feels like it's readily ever available now.
Dude.
Definitely gives a wider audience. All right, so...
I guess to wrap this up, Jim, just a couple rapid fire questions for you. I got a rapid fire question for you.
Shoot, I got a question for you. All right.
Let's do this.
Here, look.
Bring us home, Jim.
Let me just ask a very simple question for you. First, we talked about this earlier off the mic, but what is your thoughts on the word weeb now? And what do you know the first full word of what the word weeb comes from? And do you know the origin of the word?
I honestly do not. It was kind of...
Is it offensive? Is it? I don't know.
Look, obviously, me and Kosi, maybe even Jim can agree to this. When we were kids, you know, let's say we weren't very woke. We were all lived in a world where cruelty and...
Being an SJW was
and
not cool
trolling in the name of having fun was the name of the game, and you better be on board with it, or you were going to get absolutely bullied to shreds.
Oh, yeah. Simple
not time. To excuse it. Not to excuse it or pretend that I was some victim or anything. But, yeah, no, for weeb, more like some, you know, anime.
I'm going to look this up right now.
You know, Wait for it. Some dude who watched too much anime and played too much Magic the Gathering. Mm-hmm. Is it
offensive now? If I call you a weeb, are you offended? Hey, you're such a weeb.
It sounds derogatory to me. Just like
it
how just
sounds kind of derogatory. It's almost... But it's like almost like a term of endearment now. Hmm. You know what I mean? It's almost like a repossessed term. It's kind of like nerd. How we used to be, oh, loser nerd. And nowadays, I'm so nerdy. I'm pretty geeky.
I love,
you know, Pokemon, and I love, you know, anime, and I love all this stuff. I love it. I heartily enjoy it.
Yes.
And I'm proud and happy to cherish that. But, you know, once upon a time, you know, if somebody had gone up to me and, you know, when I was 14 years old and called me a weeb, I would have been like, no, I like Halo and I like football, and I'm a manly man.
Like, yeah. I don't know what that means, but I'm taking it to respect.
The full word is weeaboo. Uh-huh. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
I have not.
Yeah, no. Okay. The full word is weeaboo, and the origin has nothing related to anime at all.
Okay.
It comes from a webcomic called Perry Bible Fellowship. Long-time internet fans might know this, PBF. Perry Bible Fellowship. And it is a simple 4-panel comic that made no sense about a guy in an office that goes against the office etiquette and is about to get paddled. And as he's about to get paddled, they scream, weeaboo, weeaboo. And that is the origin of weeb.
What?
Yes.
Those damn Bible
web comic from ancient times, and then they just took this word and tied it to the anime community.
That's funny to hear that. That's funny to hear.
What the? Okay, no, I legit.
I would never have guessed that. I mean, it's fun. Some of them like AZN was yeah. popular.
Yeah,
it was popular in the lexicon. You know, all these little. It's wild thinking back on it. It's wild having that nostalgia.
Nah, that's cool, bro.
No, but I appreciate you giving us that little kind of history lesson. Definitely, I don't think I would take as offense to it nowadays. Again, liking anime is popular. It used to be back in the day, you know, you were watching Pokemon. You know, we talk about movies, anime movies in the theaters. You know, the first Pokemon movie was a big hit in the theater.
Did you get that Pokemon card, though?
Yes, of course. The Mew Pokemon card, the hieroglyphics.
Yeah, I got the
That's the second movie. Oh, you misremembered. No. The first movie was with the different Raikou. With different Pokemon, Mew? I believe.
No, bro. I'm pretty sure the first Mewtwo versus Mew movie had like that fancy Mew card.
Was it? Maybe I'm missing.
Remember, I think you might be thinking about the second movie.
Gave, I think I could be confusing.
They gave them out. Right, they gave right. stuff out.
You're talking about right that little purple Mew.
They
card
gave them out at like the theater.
Yeah, you can still get it for $20 on eBay.
That's crazy. I cherish that card. That was so. I used to love Pokemon cards.
Also, shout out to Burger King. They had the Pokeballs with the Pokemon toys or cards inside. It kind of it was almost a toss.
But I frankly think that's part of what ruined anime's. Perception in the States. There's, it's some loser thing for kids, mm-hmm. right? It's not some serious stuff. You know, people had the impression of, Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! And not Ghost in the Shell.
Not Akira.
None of these intense, very mature, very serious anime. You know, people hear animation, the closest thing to adult animation was South Park and
Family Guy.
King of the Hill, maybe.
King of the Hill. It really was. Oh, animation is some dumb kid stuff, Flintstones, Looney Tunes.
No, you're right? Definitely right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So definitely it's been a sea change back where there's that acceptance, there's that appreciation for what anime truly is. You love to see it, frankly. It's a quality art style. And I agree with Jim, the people who actually make it, the animators, the artists, they deserve to get paid fairly for their work.
Yes.
Well, Jim, thanks, man. You dropped a bunch of knowledge, man. That was awesome.
Learned some good stuff today.
Yeah, absolutely, glad to be here, fellas.
Dude, and just I guess as we wrap this up, man. I want to have a segment where it's basically called Plug of the Week. Every week we have a chance to really show some love to like a thing or maybe like whatever we're watching, listening to. So you have the floor, Jim. Is there something you want to plug this week for our listeners out there that you're excited about? You have the floor.
I get to go first. Okay, I will plug an anime then, since we're talking about anime. All
right.
One that just recently finished airing on Crunchyroll called Frieren, or Soso no Frieren, or Frieren the Slayer. And I'll go ahead and spell it out, because it's not really easy. F-R-E-I-R-E-N. Frieren. And this is probably my anime of 2023 and even 2024. Okay. It is about a mage elf who was part of the party that destroyed and killed the Demon King, okay. and her life afterwards, on how she goes living on beyond killing after. What happens after you kill the Demon King? And then it literally takes place 80 years afterwards.
Okay.
And you're following her as she goes around and travels the world. It's kind of got this comfy slice of life feel to it, but the combat animation is some of the best you'll see since Demon Slayer.
Okay.
Wow. Bringing in a cast of characters that are somewhat tropey, yet interact in a very cozy way. Once again, that's So-So No Frieren, available on Crunchyroll.
Okay. So for my plug of the week, since we were talking about mecha animes and mecha shows lately, and I'm a big mecha fan, I want to plug a video game, actually, called Armored Core. Came out last year, Core 6. Guys, if you like mecha stuff, you like mecha games, go get this game. It's from From Software, famous from the Dark Souls series, Elden Ring, famous for those games. You still have some of the same hard combat, some of the intense memorization, but it's a very different feel. Listen, there's at some point, you either like mecha stuff or you don't, right? You're that guy who sees Gundams and gets freaking excited and passionate and wants to watch some more. Or it's not really your thing, which is understandable. But if you like mecha stuff, go get Armored Core 6. It's
seconded.
It's absolutely amazing experience for a mecha game. Right. Tosi?
So my plug is not anime related at all. It's me plugging actually a podcast I'm really into right now. It's called Mind the Game. So this is LeBron James and JJ Redick. It's their podcast. So LeBron James, anyone living under a freaking rock, he's one of the greatest basketball players to ever live. JJ Redick is one of the greatest six men, one of the greatest just role players that we've ever seen, and they've both collaborated to make a podcast where they just talk basketball. They're huge nerds. They're very, very accomplished in their sports, but gigantic nerds of the game. And they're really, it's a podcast, not really, I wouldn't say it's for like casual people. They really get into basketball, but if you just love hearing them just shoot the shot with just their knowledge, it's fantastic. So I've been listening to it a lot and I love it.
Can I just take a quick second to note that JJ Redick going from a Duke douche bro to an awesome, chill, informed podcast, media guy.
That transformation.
I loved it.
That's a great anime plot twist. That's a top 10 anime plot twist in real life.
Dude, to bring it around. Like,
well done, JJ Redick.
He definitely had a turner on him. Like, I loved him at Duke when I was a kid. And yeah, just seeing how...
I hated him at Duke when I was a kid.
Yeah, like just seeing how he's definitely progressed and like he's older now. And like, I don't know, it's just great. But yeah, man, that's my plug. But I think that'll be it, guys. So listeners out there, I want to thank y'all just for listening in to this episode of It Was Mooney. If you want to find us, you can find us on Spotify. Just search for It Was Mooney. I want to thank our special guest, Jim. Seriously, man, thank you. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you for having me.
I have you back.
Love having you here.
This was awesome, man. Like, seriously, I've wanted to have Jim on for a minute, so I'm glad we're able to get Jim on here. So, so next week, just look out for us in the next episode. But until next time, guys, I'm Kosi, and adios.
Adios, guys.
Peace out.